CliffCentral.com. Ah, yes. Good morning. CliffCentral.com on Thursday. Morning, Pumelele. How are you?
Producer Ryan is hovering over my head here to make sure that I unmute myself.
Oh, okay. So he's got to make sure that you press the right button at the right time. He's very good at that. Knows what he's doing.
It's bad enough.
All right. So
that
how are we?
I've unmuted myself.
Dude, how are we doing?
It's like the 23rd of February. It's like we just blinked and here we are.
That's ridiculous.
I definitely think that the world is spinning faster.
Well, I don't know. Like this week, I've had this this stupid head cold. It's just been like sniffles and things. Nothing heavy. But you know, again, I've said this before on the show, and maybe people are sick of hearing it, but when you are well, when you are healthy, you don't think about anything to do with your health. You're like, oh, well, this is how it should be. You take it for granted. And then when you suddenly feel sick, you're like, what the hell? What's going on here? You know,
you
like
do sound a little. I hope you get better by tonight.
Yeah, I'll be all right. Don't worry. I'll be sorted for tonight. I mean, I don't feel shitty. It's just, you know, you hear that I sound a bit blocked up and everything. So my apologies to anyone who finds that hugely offensive.
Well, the good news is you're way over there. I absolutely love having people who sound sick, even if you don't feel very sick, sound sick around you. You're like, dude, you know, you're exposing us here. Exposing us.
But also, I reckon a lot of this has to do with people who are like, you're exposed to all this cold and rainy weather in the middle of summer. And your body just goes, hang on, this doesn't make sense. You know, because we've had a huge amount of rain. I mean, like we really have had.
I have my blanket out. I actually, I took my winter blanket out. I was just like, listen, I know it's February. I know it shouldn't, but this is not the life I'm meant to be living.
No.
Socks at all. So no, I have taken my winter blanket out and I'm quite annoyed.
Right. I mean, who would think that this was correct for, you know, this time of year that we would have this much rain? And also, you know what? Ryan's telling me to move my iPad down from the camera here. Hang on. Just get that out of the way. There we go. Like it made that much of a difference, Ryan. That big a deal? No. Anyway, so as I was saying, I think that Simpiwe was telling me last Friday that she's got the heater on in their office, which is, I think that's a bit extreme, but you know, if it makes people happy, go for it.
I don't think it's, I don't think it's a bit extreme. I think we're about to find out because this is new. This space is all new for us and there's a lot of glass here. So we're about to find out how cold this place gets. We don't know.
Well, I remember we spoke to a guy last year about like what the best way is to heat your room without using too much electricity. And he said an air conditioner is the best because you turn that air conditioner up a little bit. That is actually the best and most effective way to warm a room with the least amount of power used. So of course an air conditioner uses a lot of power, but it uses a lot less than those heaters that you plug in.
Yes, that it does. That it does. I have no air conditioners in my house, but I now have a fireplace. You know, the fireplace, which is also, which by the way, I have set up to at the moment's notice. If I have to like turn on a fire, I will. I'm not above that either.
Oh no! I don't have a problem with that either. No, that's one of the benefits. Like, and I will burn fossil fuels. I will burn wood. I will burn. I'm sorry. I don't care about whether people tell me it's right or wrong. If you're cold, we live in the third world. I'm going to make a fire. That's what I'm going to do. So, a bunch of people really asking about the big story of the morning. And it's something that Ryan told me about first thing this morning, but I did see it in the news before I came on the show. And that is this story, which Audrey wants to tell us about. What will anger South Africans enough to revolt? Andre de Reiter spelling truths and getting removed for doing so. Well, this is what's happened. You know, he did an interview with Annika Larsson, and he basically admitted what we've all suspected for such a long time. We're all like, well, what is the real problem with Eskom? And we know that it's been a lack of maintenance, a lack of care, a complete disregard for what Eskom is there for. But the true evil, the thing that is corrupting and rotting South Africa from within is what we've said all along. Surprise, surprise. My sneezing.
Bless you.
I mean,
well, obvious. did you see any of the interview? No. So I did not watch. I understand it was taken down last night from the ENCA website.
Well, first of all, why would ENCA go along with anybody who told them to take it down? First of all, which I think makes them equally shameful as the people who André de Ruyter says are the problem. But what he basically said that got everybody's hackles raised is that he's admitted that that Eskom is just a gravy train for ANC cadres who are trying to get their free lunch, and that there are certain vested interests in Eskom that it's impossible to remove because those people are on the take in such a big way and they're connected to so many powerful people that if you try and get rid of them, they will put poison in your coffee or they will try to remove you. And he was meant to work, what, until the end of March? And now he's been prematurely removed because obviously what he said is massively embarrassing to the government.
So what he said is massively embarrassing to people who know he is talking about them. That interview, he did not name a single person. He just said, sure, senior government minister. He said, no, did not say... It didn't say Gwede Mandashe or Pravin Gordhan, or he just said senior government ministers. People are being told, we're being told to back away. Da, 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 da. And it was quite a, I thought it was quite a soft interview. I can't believe that it got this kind of heckles. Because it was, you know, it was just a walk in the park with all the things that we already know, all the things that have been alluded to by so many people, nothing, for me, nothing explosive. Like, if he had said, well, it's...
Well, what's explosive...
Who's making my life hell. It is.
What's explosive is that they complain so much that they've had to take the interview down. And did you see Pravin's response? I mean, this is typical authoritarian... Yeah. This is typical authoritarian leftist response to anything, is try to shut it down, try to get the people into trouble. This is how people on the left behave whenever they're caught with their hands in the cookie jar, which is often, by the way. So he's leaving Eskom with immediate effect, according to the story, following the convening of a special board meeting. So they can call a special board meeting to get rid of a guy who's basically saying what everybody already knows. But they can't do this when the cold is wet and they can't generate any electricity for us. I mean, they should just basically, we should lock this board into a permanent crisis meeting, give them only enough to live, like push it under the door like you would with prisoners, and say, right, until you guys have figured something out and until you take control of this situation, because it sure as hell got them to make a quick decision about him. Wouldn't it be nice if they could make quick decisions about all the other stuff? And how about firing? How about firing 3/4 of the people who are on that gravy train? Because it may be a minister or two, it may be Gwede, it may be Pravin, and I'll get to Pravin's reaction just now. But what bothers me about this is that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are on the payroll at Eskom who are doing nothing. They're just there to get a salary. Right?
Pravin.
Right?
Let's talk about Pravin.
Okay, let's talk about him, because I hate this guy. I really do think, and you know, all these people who've always said, oh no, he's the good guy in the Zuma government, he's the good guy in the Mbeki government. I'm always like, hang on, are you guys even paying attention? Because his reaction immediately was to say, well, people shouldn't have political opinions in public. I'm like, excuse me? He says, no, people should keep their political point of view to themselves and shouldn't say that in public interviews. That's more or less what he said, right? I mean, what so, a cheek.
Here's your Zulu word for the day. Isazela. So considering isazela, right? What is eating pavin?
Yes.
That's what it's called, isazela. Because considering that Andre did not name anybody for pavin to react in this manner, he's obviously the guilty party. That's what's eating up. He's obviously the guilty party because there was nobody named for him to be so up in arms all of a sudden. And we've heard nary a peep out of Pravin for months.
Yeah, that's right.
For months.
And then suddenly he's provoked into saying something. You've got to think, well, it's him that they're talking about. And I wouldn't be surprised.
He knows he is the guilty party.
I couldn't agree more. So to me, there are a couple of guilty parties here. There are whoever Andre Durrett is talking about, and I think you may be right that it is Pravin and possibly some others. He didn't say it was just one. Then there's ENCA for taking the interview down, because obviously someone from government, probably Pravin again, decided, oh, no, we've got to shut this down. Again, typical authoritarian leftist responses. If something comes out that is true and it makes you look bad, just shut it down. Just use whatever power you have, use whatever influence you have to have it scrubbed, because that is just the most scary thing for you, is that people might actually hear the truth. So that is unacceptable, that ENCA let anybody tell them that they must take down their own content is outrageous, right?
So, you know what? We've spoken about it on the show before, and I've said to you that, you know, we often talk about corruption and we talk about the government being the guilty party, but we very, very, very rarely speak about the role the private sector plays in this corrupt relationship. What was that with Jacob Zuma and Shabir Sheikh? Generally corrupt relationship. Because that's what we saw. And so when ENCA folds, they're folding because they are just as complicit, right? Whether it is for the advertising money, whether it is they are fearful for their license, whatever it is, the fact that they would fold, even though they want to hold themselves as, didn't all those billboards about corruption, Jacob Zuma and being truth to power and the voice out there in the dark. But look at this, look how they respond. So when they get the phone call where they should be standing their ground, they fold.
They fold, which is just weakness. And it's actually quite pathetic. So, you know, I would think of this less as private business being complicit and more about just media business lack of courage. Just that they allow themselves to be told what to do. They have no balls. So I'm just going to say if they did take it down, and if that's the case, then I'm very, very disappointed in them. And I just want to say here, there's a part of this that also we mustn't just gloss over. So what Durrett has said is the ghosts of Marx and Lenin still haunt the halls of Lutuli House. People still firmly are committed to a 1980s style ideology. And this may warrant a discussion of what Enoch Godongwana, the Minister of Finance, said yesterday, because he said they're going to be privatizing Eskom. They're going to be giving people tax rebates on solar. They're going to essentially sell off coal-fired power stations to whoever can buy them and make them profitable and run them properly, which is an admission that the ideology that guided the ANC up to now is a complete failure. Even if the finance minister is the only one who thinks that, he thinks that. And I don't doubt what Durrett is saying here, because I've met people in the ANC, I've met people on university campuses in South Africa who are probably going to be in the future ANC, whatever that incarnation is. And they do believe in this crap. They haven't read enough history books to know that this stuff is a complete road to failure. And it just drives me absolutely up the wall that there's still people in the world in the year 2023 who go, nah, it's not the theory that's bad. It's just the people who put it into practice. In other words, I would do it much better if you gave me the tools. I'll be a better Stalin. I'll be a better Lenin. I'll be a better Marx. I'll be a better Che Guevara or Fidel Castro. No, you won't. You're not as clever as them. And they fucked it up. So you've got no chance of doing it. And you know, if the ANC just admitted to themselves, if they sat in the next NEC and did nothing else, but went, guys, this ideology and this calling each other comrades and this romanticization of the friends that we had during the apartheid era, who we staked everything on because we couldn't have done it without them. We have to abandon that for modernity and for lessons learned.
You know, I don't differently. I don't think they have to do that. They don't. We, the people, however, need to align ourselves with what works for us. They don't have to do that. If that is their ideology as a party, we don't have to go along with it. If that's who they believe they are, if that's what they want, that's fine. But we, the people, have to align us with what we believe is going to work for us and the country. So they don't have to change. I think that this, you know, like political parties that we vote for, not like soccer clubs. You don't have to be indebted to it for life. But that's who they are, and that's their ideology. We don't have to go along with it.
Well, okay, fair enough. But sooner or later, there's got to be some payback, right? There's got to be a payback at the polls. So if that's what's coming, good. Nikita says, damn, bringing in the Russian Revolution references is deep derator. Props to him, though. Anyone who thinks he might be concerned about more than just cyanide and the coffee from here on in. Well, again, the people who would try to kill someone like Johan Derrida or anybody else. And by the way, we on this show have not been friends and fans of Derrida either. So it's worth mentioning that I think we've been circumspect at best about what was possible at ESCOM. And we haven't given him credit for being some kind of genius. But obviously now he has nothing to lose. So he's telling the truth.
So when it all came crumbling down, this whole week and last week, I've been asking myself, so Andre Derrida has resigned. Mm-hmm. And yet he is still the person out there speaking on behalf of ESCOM, telling us what's happening. Yeah. He's the only person telling us what's happening. I kept asking myself, how long is his notice yet? They should have let him go when he resigned. They should have let him go then, right? Because he has, and he said this when he resigned. He said, I have no ideas. I can't do anything else. Let somebody else take over. You know, so why keep him till the end of March? So, buy a laeg.
Here's the headline from Times Live that Pravin Gordhan, this is what he said, is keep your political views private, which is such a stupid thing to say. I mean, even if you're employed by a parastatal, the whole reason that you're there is for your political views, because we know that these guys, that's why you get hired. And so Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan, the fact that he has suddenly raised his head above the parapet wall, when throughout this crisis, all he's had to say is, oh no, we've got it under control. Everything's fine. Lie upon lie upon lie. It's straight out of the big book of lies. And Pravin Gordhan is a master at this. So I think if anything, Pumi's right. Let's take this as an admission of guilt on the part of this horrible man and get him out of government. This is where I don't care if it's the EFF that brings this about. I don't care if it's the DA that brings it about. I don't care if it's the ANC that brings it about. Get rid of this poisonous man and his poisonous views. And the fact that he was competent at raising taxes shouldn't surprise anyone, because all that parasites can do is be really good at squeezing blood out of the host's body. That's all he's done. So Pravin Gordhan, may you disappear into ignominy. And in fact, I'd quite like to see some people being held responsible for this in the long run. Like, let's have a commission of inquiry once this ESCOM thing, because you hear you're not good on Guadalupe. Yesterday, he said they're going to pay off some of Eskom's debt, and they're going to have to do that quickly because that debt is what's pulling this country down too. While he's doing that, that's absolutely fine. Use some of the tax money. They had a bumper tax season. I don't know if you heard that part of the speech. They've brought in more money than ever, so they've had an excellent tax raising. I'd like them to pay those of us back whom they've been holding tax back from. Refunds that we are due. I'd like that to happen ASAP, but let's take that money, repay Eskom so we can get that debt into an area where there's some control. But also, let's spend a piece of that pie on holding people's feet to the fire. I want people to go to jail.
Y'all have been waiting for a long time.
I don't care. I've got
another news. You and I are not dying
anytime soon, right? We're here for a long day.
But the other news story that has been eclipsed by the Derrida saga is the Newlane court case.
Yes.
Because the NPA yesterday concluded, you know, they have the Newlane court case, for those of you who may have forgotten, is the first one of the cases that have gone to court following the state capture commission. And Newlane is also one of the things that they were trying very hard to do, was bring the Gupta leaks into evidence so that they can use all of the information that they got from the Gupta links. And yes, the NPA concluded its presentation to the court yesterday, and it doesn't look like they're going to win with getting the Gupta links in there. In fact, almost everything I've heard coming out of that that's been reported from that case is how the NPA has been fumbling from day to day. So that looks like it's going to come to naught.
Well, you'll be excited about this, Pums, although I don't know how many other people will be. But I've found someone in the NPA who's quite high up who may be willing to join us on the show one morning to talk about what's going on there.
That is now exciting.
And then we can ask about this question and all the other questions that we have, because I think they've been, at best, a drag on things. They have been uninspiring, and I think a lot of South Africans have completely lost faith in the NPA. So they need to do a big job going forward of convincing us that they're actually on our side.
So everybody's complaining about my sound. I've asked Ryan to come check it out. Gareth, am I fine?
Ryan, it's not.
Does
the,
I sound it, like I a bot?
No, it's almost like there's a delay going on there. I think you need to plug directly into the internet. So okay. While you're sorting that out, let me just carry on, because a couple of headlines I want to get to this morning. So I'll carry on with that. Ryan, sort out Pumi's connector directly to the line there, like you do to me. And then we'll be able to figure out from there what we're up to. All right. So while they're getting all of that sorted out, let me tell you some other stuff, important things that are going on. First of all, let me just mute them. Hang on. Otherwise, we have to listen to that going on in the background. All right. So while Pumi and Ryan are sorting that out, a couple of things that are in the news this morning that we need to look at. I mentioned the budget, and we'll get into some of that a little bit later on in the Burning Platform. We're going to be joined this morning, you'll be pleased to know, by Jonathan Witt, who was a co-host of the famous Renegade Report. You know, that show, just quickly before we get into the news, that show keeps coming up in Google searches as one of the top South African podcasts, even now, years after it's been mothballed. And he will be back today. He's taking a little bit of time out of his busy Saving of Lives schedule to join us to talk about, you know, politics, current affairs, and so on. Cape Town has been rocked by a mass shooting. Now, this is scary. We know we live in a violent country, but it seems that, you know, in the wake of AKA's death, maybe people are extra sensitive about this subject. Cape Town rocked by a mass shooting in Wallerstein near Kryfontein. 4 people shot dead in the informal settlement. Police were called out on Tuesday night and found the bodies of the 4 with gunshot wounds inside a house. The Kryfontein police precinct is ranked 7th in the top 30 worst areas for murder in the country. Oy, oy, oy. According to crime statistics, 60 people were murdered in Kryfontein between October and December. Just 3 months. Western Cape Police said that the province's violent crime detectives were questioning several people about the latest killings in the area. The motive for the shooting is yet to be determined. Further details about the deceased persons are yet to be released. But an ugly, unnecessary, horrible story there. And you know, people will go, we got to blame gun ownership, but this is not legal gun ownership. I will pretty much put my head on the block and say that if any of the people who get arrested in this even have a legal firearm license, I will admit that I'm the wrongest, most stupid, most backward, dumbest person ever to comment on anything in South Africa, because I'm that sure that it wouldn't be. In other news, Tanzania has defended the Diary of a Wimpy Kid book ban. Now, this is interesting. You know, we often hear about like cultural things in Africa that make us look either really good or really bad. But apparently Tanzania has banned the Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which is a series of books, because some pages were pushing agendas against our culture. Now, before, I might have been one of the people on the bandwagon to say, oh, well, this is stupid of Tanzania. How can they go against what is obviously, you know, progressive and, you know, powerful thought and helping kids to deal with stuff in the modern world? If it goes against their culture, surely they have a right to say, no, we're actually not going to go with this. So the ministry is uncomfortable with some of the content in these books. And that is according to their government spokesperson. He said the government had faced a dilemma about how to separate the pages that they didn't approve of from the rest of the book. That is why they thought we can have better content than what is there. And they insist that not all versions of Wimpy Kid are going to be removed from there, but some that go against their culture. Parents in Tanzania were shocked because they didn't know about the issues, and some of them took harsher action than banning the books. Some of them destroyed the books. He said that people should respect the views of Tanzanian parents. So what they've got here is a series of books clearly pushing some woke ideas down the throats of Tanzanians. And not all of them are happy about this. I wonder what do you think of this, Pumi? Let me just unmute you. Let's just see if we can get you. There we go. All right, Pums. Let's see if we've got a better connection now. Your mic is still off on your side. Not good to go, Ryan. Not yet. Gotta press it. There we go. Try now.
And now.
You're on.
Sort of. Right. Maybe.
It's gotta be there.
Dun, 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 dun.
Just connect to there.
Oh, so it might be settings. Nothing. It's all on.
You can hear me, but I can't hear you.
We can hear you. Why is this all gone black?
Ryan, we've got no sound. No sound coming through at all,
he says. No sound.
I think that this whole thing with Tanzania is a perfect example of how,
no sound.
You know, people talk about imperialism and they talk about, you know, the obvious and overt forms of imperialism. Like, we're going to come in and take over your country and make it a colony of ours, which is clearly old school imperialism. But modern imperialism, I think, is also ideological and cultural. It's where America's LGBTQ community wants a rainbow flag flown at the Afghan embassy in Kabul, which, again, is not part of anything to do with the agenda of the average Afghan. And I just wonder, you know, when these people are busy talking about woke politics in a far-flung corner of the world, because it's cool in America and because that's the agenda that they're following in America, that's a kind of imperialism that is much more cultural. It bothers me. I think it's very, very interesting that Tanzania and other countries like that are just saying, no, actually, we're not going to tolerate this. Let's see if we got Pumi now. How's it, Pums?
Hello, hello, hello.
Nope.
So people on the still comments no sound can now
from
hear
you guys.
Me. So in the comments, they can hear.
Is your channel open on the desk there?
Everything is open, Babe.
Everything. 1, 2, 1, 2. All right, while they're sorting that out, let me just get on with this. Okay, so also winter storm updates across the US and Canada, and this may seem like it's irrelevant to us, but actually it's an interesting portent of how the rest of the world is also not able to deal with some of the things that we've assumed are true, even though they're now being brought into question. So it's interesting. We're always told by the climate activists, and of course, I'm not a climate denier. I have to always say that up front because that's become the new, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but even though the vaccines ended up being completely pointless and useless in every respect, you now have to say that, right? Just like you had to say that before. Otherwise, people go, oh, you're a climate denier, so you just think that global warming is not happening. Of course, I think it's happening. I think that the Earth is getting warmer. I think that's the evidence is irrefutable on that front. But what we've discovered, and now it is also irrefutable to say, because maybe I could call you a climate denier if you didn't admit that heat kills less people than cold. More people in the world die from the cold than die from the heat. So a bit of global warming is probably better for humans in the long run, even if it's not better for anything else. And practically, it's probably also better to have more carbon in the air for plants. But I don't see any plants rights activists getting all, you know, up in arms about that. So there's a report that's just recently been published in the Washington Post about how this, you know, the couple of degrees of heat that have been raised in the, let me just see what's going on here with these guys. Ryan, can you hear us now? Let's see if we can get Pumi on here. Pums, are you there?
I'm not hearing
you. I am here. Everybody can hear me. Can you hear me now? Fabulous.
Yeah, we're all right, there we are. So I don't know what the problem was on your side or on mine because everything was the same. All right. So we were talking about this Tanzanian story, and I saw you had something to say there about how they're banning a series of books because they say it goes against their culture. And I was waxing lyrical about imperial culturalism or cultural imperialism because I think actually good for Tanzania for standing up to this stuff. They don't like the content of these books. It goes against Tanzanian culture. Shouldn't they be allowed to do that? Parents?
I think you can then scramble an egg. You know, we now live in such an interconnected world that the things that we are exposed to and that kids are exposed to, and this is where, you know, it then becomes as parents, what are the conversations you're having with your kids? But what you're not going to be able to do, and we see it, I mean, it's the debate is happening in America too about the books that they're banning in different states and what they're taking off the shelves and taking out of the libraries. You're just not going to be able to. If you look at the chaos and the madness that happens on TikTok, these are all the things that kids are exposed to all day, every day. And the important thing, I think, for parents is to make sure that you have the conversations because kids are raised by their families and by their communities. And the things that their families and communities, the culture, the traditions, the practices, that's what kids are going to learn. But you're not going to be able to shield them from everything else that happens in the world. What you want to be able to do is you want to be able to give them the tools to discern for themselves. And mind you, it's also, I think, for parents to understand, for all of us grown-up people to understand that we're not going to be able to make young people to do the things that we want them to do. It's going to do the stuff that they want to do.
I kind of agree with you. I just think that if, for example, you know, America thinks that forcing American culture down our throats, right or wrong, is inevitable. If there are people who are going to resist that, good for them. For whatever reason, they should be entitled to. We shouldn't have to accept that it's an inevitability. That we're all going to have to be Americans?
You don't have to be an American. All I'm saying is that what gives one person the ultimate right over everybody else to decide for everybody else? That's where the problem lies. And that's why I'm saying what you're not going to be able to do is you're not going to be able to shield all people from all things all the time. The only thing that you can do is you can give them the tools to discern for themselves what works and what doesn't. But deciding to take things off the shelf.
When it becomes about kids, I mean, apparently they're not taking these out of libraries. They're just taking them out of the school curriculum, which is an important content decision, not just for parents, but for the government and for education. I mean, surely some books, regardless of how popular they are in the culture, they're not appropriate for kids.
And surely the people who should be making that decision are the people whose kids. It's not the government. It's not for the government to decide that we don't. So if the parents are shocked that this decision is being made, who was consulted to say that these kids are being protected? Who was consulted if the parents are shocked?
Fair enough. Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm going to save all the budget stuff, if you don't mind, Pums, for the burning platform, because there was quite a lot in there. And I think there's always stuff to discuss. It was a bit of a,
It was a bit blah,
right? It was, nobody was really that interested in listening. I don't know how many people watched it live. We spoke about this jokingly with the president's State of the Nation address, that most people will just get a copy of it and then have someone else analyze it for them and give them the like breakdown. And I think that's even more true for the budget speech, don't you?
I listened to it, obviously, and it was a short one. And it was very bland. I mean, I don't think that in this environment, I don't think that the minister should be, you know, high-fiving himself about record tax collections. From all that that's doing is it's throttling the environment, right? If people are already complaining about high prices, high inflation, where is this money coming from that you're getting
Yeah.
And again, you know, I just think we've spoken about this before, and I just think that there's not enough thinking. There's not enough thinking and there's not enough lateral thinking. There's nothing new. Nothing new in that budget. There's no new thinking, new ways of solving the problems that we have. It's just more of the same.
Well, we'll have to see. I mean, I think it would be of great interest to the average South African to see how the money is actually being spent. But this is the only opportunity we really get to see that. I mean, there's the Auditor General who comes in at some point and like does these random checks on what's been going on with our tax money. But I suppose we're still most of us sitting around.
Auditor General? You know, so the Auditor General and all of the things that for all the loading that the Auditor General's office gets, you have to ask yourself, where is the Auditor General when municipalities are collapsing because their processes are not correct? They've been audited surely all of this time. Where has the Auditor General been in the Eskom mess? Every year, there are financials coming out of that organization. Every year, there's, you know.
I'm not going to defend the Auditor General because I don't have a dog in the fight for the Auditor General. But I've got to ask this. Isn't that only something that can happen afterwards? Like the Auditor General can't come in before spending and wasteful expenditure is put into action. They have to come in afterwards.
And the auditing... the principle around it is that it flags where all the issues are at the end of each year, every year when those financials come out, all of these things should be flagged. And that's when you make the decisions of how do we change this going forward into the new year? Where are the problems? Where are we looking at? But, you know, here we are in this deep, deep, deep hole. And none of that is being scrutinized. And yet every year they're doing their job.
No, good point. Well put. All right. I want us to cross to Dr. Mark, who of course hosts his own show on cliffcentral.com. He is from the T Clinic. He's host of the T Health show. And we're going to talk about some of the things that Dr. Mark is doing on the show and also some of the things that the T Clinic does. And I think this might be very, very interesting. So Dr. Mark, how are you?
Morning, Gareth. I'm good. Thanks. How are you guys?
Hello. Good.
See you on the show. How are things going at the T Clinic?
You know what? The year started off with a bang. I think everyone is literally a bang. Yeah. Everyone is at the moment just in that place where they're not feeling great and they would do everything or anything just to feel some kind of normality and feel a little bit better.
Well, let's talk about that because obviously, you know, there are a lot of people struggling with all kinds of things, but one of the things you can take control of and that you at the T Clinic do is you give people a test and you try to find out whether their internal balance is right, whether they've got the right kind of lifestyle, whether they're taking the right kinds of supplements, whether they're living a healthy kind of day-to-day, eating, exercising, and obviously then take into consideration the effects of aging.
Gareth, you know what? Actually, I presented at a symposium on stress. And if we look at the stress response happens in two ways. Number one, the immediate response is that you are going to activate your adrenal system. And if you activate the adrenal system, you immediately have an increase in your blood pressure, you have an increase in your heart rate, you start moving glucose out of temporary storage into your blood vessels for energy. The problem comes in, all of us are currently under a continuous chronic kind of stress, where this stress response doesn't stop. Now, the second part of the stress response is when you start activating cortisol, which is your primary stress hormone. And cortisol now stays high for a prolonged period of time. And this causes damage throughout the body, whether it's on your cardiovascular system. It changes your brain morphology, leads to anxiety, it leads to depression. It suppresses your adrenal glands, which means that you're going to be tired. You're going to downregulate everything. And this is not something that any of us can get away from. I like what you said earlier that at the T Clinic, what we do is we go in and try and identify systems that are going out of balance. Now, it's all good and well that, you know, what we can identify these systems and try and fix them. But I think this is something that a lot of us can do far better at home through identifying our stresses, the silly little stuff that creates conflict within yourself. It's very interesting that stress is cumulative. It's small little things that keep on building up. And if you don't deal with them or somehow manage to avoid them, one tiny little thing like squeezing the toothpaste in the middle sets your partner off completely. And that's happened in my house this morning.
Oh, shit. All right. So, South Africans are stressed, and I'm so glad that you brought stress into the conversation, because a lot of us don't know how to cope with that. And part of it is a lifestyle thing. Part of it is psychological, but part of it is also we live in extraordinary and very difficult times for some people because of the amount of stress that isn't as a result of our own poor decision making. You know, you've got things that are going on, this whole situation with Eskom. You've got people who are driving. You know, driving in traffic where none of the traffic lights work, you've got potholes, you've got all of that shit to deal with. And then to make that worse, we have relationship pressures, we have our own health concerns, we have job and
work
money.
And money.
Money. But this is all a big part of it, right? How do you see the whole picture? How do you see the big picture when you're looking at these things?
You know what? At the moment, I'm seeing us living on the cusp of chronic stress moving over to a burnout situation.
Oof.
We know that you can only run an engine for so long before things are going to start seizing up. And when they do seize up, now it's when you have the signs of fatigue. Chronic stress leads to a sense of emotional distress. Now, that sense becomes generalized and long-lived. And that leads to disengagement, disinterest, and eventually depression and complete shutdown. And just think about us. We are seeing more and more people that are moving out of our social environment that says, you know, I'm not going out. I don't want to go and do that. And this is because of that fatigue syndrome. This is incredibly difficult to treat. And the patient themselves cannot get themselves out of there. So I think if we are just cognizant of the fact that, yes, we are stressed, there's no way that we can avoid this. We have to accept it.
I mean, you know, there's also been the pressure, which everybody refers to occasionally as the pressure of kind of lockdowns and COVID and all of that, and how that also removed people from their coping mechanisms, society, pressure releases, being with friends, being with family. How do we know if we're heading down that path? What are the telltale signs? I think a lot of people want to know, what should we be on the lookout for, men, women, whoever you are, that could be the warning signs that you're heading for this burnout?
Number one, changes in your sleep pattern. If you can't sleep properly at night, or you wake up in the morning and you are not refreshed, something is wrong. Changes in irritability. If your family starts saying to you, but you know what, come on, you're snappy, you're grumpy. Yep. Irritability is one of the big signs. Changes in your levels of anxiety would point to another one. Changes in your weight. Specifically weight gain. If your diet is staying the same, your exercise is staying the same, and you are starting to gain weight, it's because of this adrenaline reaction which releases glucose and fats into the bloodstream, and you're going to store them. For guys, sexual dysfunction, either in the form of erectile dysfunction or a change in libido. Right. It's one of the first signs. So, you know, there's subtle things. And as a matter of fact, I think all of us are dealing with them. I see it in all my patients. I see it in myself. And it's because of the fact that we cannot avoid stress. We need to understand not all stress is bad for us. There's good stress. We call it eustress. And in order for us to cope with stressful situations in the future, this is good. It elevates us. It can take us to a higher level of functioning, but we can only maintain that for a certain area. If I can give people advice as to how to deal with this, number one, just identify, okay, fine, I'm going to sit in traffic. It's going to create stress in my life. Avoid it. If you can't avoid it, accept it and manage it. In other words, leave earlier or work from home or something like that. Manage your stressor. The second one is you need to exercise, whether it is jumping on a trampoline or having sex. I don't care, but you need to be physically active.
Right.
Sleep. If you're not sleeping, consult with someone. It doesn't mean that you have to go and take a sleeping tablets. There are other herbal sleeping aids available freely. You can speak to practitioners like myself that deal with medical grade CBD on prescription, which will not only help with anxiety, but it will help with your sleep. Eat healthy. Avoid sugar. Avoid salt. And sorry, when we are stressed or anxious, we grab for the alcohol and we grab for the cigarettes. If I don't have a whiskey at nighttime, I feel ill. So, you know, do these things in moderation. And then the last one, reach out to people around you. Speak to friends and family. Unfortunately, they often tell us what they think we want to hear. Get a confidant, get a mentor, go and speak to your HR person if there's stress at work, which is frequent. And, you know, talk about these things. And
these are such useful, practical things. I mean, Pumi, I can see you nodding along as well. This is all very sensible, right?
It is. You know what, Gareth, I have to be honest. It sounds very easy. It's bloody difficult to implement. People, when we come to actively lowering cortisol levels, like meditation, exercise, people find excuses. It's not difficult to do. It's bloody difficult to implement. But I think if you're aware of these kinds of things, try that. One last one that I would like to say is try and elevate your good stress levels. For instance, go and do a roller coaster ride. Go and zip line. Because if you sit in that roller coaster, you're going to elevate your or activate your stress response. But by the time that you climb off that roller coaster, you know what? It's such an euphoric feeling. And yeah. You've exercised how to deal with stress in a very productive way. Get out, go and play a team sport where you can't think about work, where it's fun, you have a drink afterwards, but you're exercising and you're outdoors.
So I do like the try different remedies, you know. So if you can't sleep, it's not a bad thing to try a sleep remedy, even if it's a sleeping tablet, even if it's a herbal, whatever. Because sometimes I think one of the things that also creates the anxiety is the anxiety of fixing it, right?
It's well, kind of all like- the anxiety of lying in bed and you can't fall asleep. So I have a rule that I give to my patients. If you get into bed and you do not fall asleep within 15 minutes, get out of bed. Either go sit and read, go bake cookies, go and have a glass of milk, but stop fixating on I have to sleep, because that creates further anxiety. A sleep routine and sleep hygiene is incredibly important. Sleep routine is literally you do the same thing every night, irrespective of whether it's 7 o'clock on a cold Sunday evening or 4 o'clock after a hell of a party. You do the same things because it starts signaling the brain that sleep is coming. No devices for at least 2 hours. So people that lie in bed thinking or reading on their iPads or their phones, absolute no-no. For one simple reason, you're stimulating cortisol, which is a stress hormone.
Right.
Hygiene is get a dark room, see if we can make it cool, have comfortable pillows. And a very, very important thing for me is if you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't go back to sleep, it's often because the brain is starved of energy. So I tell people, take a glass of milk and have a glass of milk to your bed, next to your bed. When you wake up to go and pee, just have a sip of the milk because it signals the brain energy is on its way. It's not that you have to have a midnight snack, which I do basically every evening. But, you know, it's just I am sleeping. My brain, which is incredibly active at night and needs to go through my different sleep cycles, needs energy to work. Do not starve it. Otherwise, it's going to wake up hungry.
Yeah.
I love this. Go ahead, Bums.
And being scared. Like South Africans have so much fear of so many different things. And that too creates kind of all of this anxiety. Any ideas about how to deal with some of these fears? Because a lot of them, there's nothing you can do about the things that you're afraid of.
So it's very interesting that you say that. I want to make a statement and I want you to think about this. We are not disturbed by a thing. We are disturbed by our perception of that thing. So a simple example is if I see a cobweb somewhere in a room, I'm looking for that hairy spider. You know, you will not get me in that room. But that's a very harmless cobweb. It's my perception that if there's a cobweb, there must be a spider. Often we stress and worry about things that might happen and never do, or something that we have no control over. And that's a problem. You know, it's again, is this a realistic or a perceived threat? And if it's a perceived threat, how am I going to deal with something that I cannot see, cannot change, and have no control over? It's then about becoming accepting of that and managing that condition. It's just, you know, you can't run away from a ghost that you can't see. And that's maybe not there.
Well, listen, Doc, it's always good to have you on. I'm glad that we've got you on this show this morning. But you have your own show and people are going to listen to it. It is the T-Health Show, which you can check out on cliffcentral.com every week. And Dr. Mark also, Pumi, has the distinction of doing the first ever live show from our new studio.
That was a privilege. That was very much fun.
And so, he's going to
thank you guys.
No problem. And Doc, always good to see you. Thanks for being on the show this morning.
Thanks, guys.
Cool. There it is. I mean, wasn't that practical and useful? There's stuff that we can all do from there. You don't have to go and spend money and see 10 doctors and get these pills and those pills. I mean, obviously, you know, if you need to, those are the things to do. But it's good to speak to Dr. Mark and to find out what could be missing or what you've got too much of in your life at the moment.
It's very cool.
And parallel parking to go to Dr. Mark's first comment says you could start by getting your own tube of toothpaste. Right?
Yeah.
All right. When we come back, the burning platform, which is going to be fiery this morning. I feel it in my belly. It's all on the way.
CliffCentral.com.